Welcome to the Unmuted Podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Jay Mariotti. They say audio reading is the new way to enjoy the written word, all ears, no hands. So I present you with my latest column, which also appears on the Barrett Sports Media Industry site. Literally caught in the crossfire of civil unrest Sunday, where I live in LA, I wonder if a tortured and anguished America can recover now from the convergence of police brutality, a devastating pandemic, and rampant unemployment. I am sipping a glass of white wine right now because you know what? It's been a very long day and a very long year in a distressed world. This is my turf, the beach community of Santa Monica, where I moved to worship the sun and escape the crime and the deep freeze of Chicago, right? Well, I've just watched paradise degenerate into hell on earth, California. Zip code 90409. We are almost 2,000 miles from Minneapolis, but looking around here, the world feels as bleak as it did when a racist cop pressed his knee for more than 8 minutes against the neck of George Floyd, killing him. Over there on Ocean Avenue, where I drive my bike most days, a row of police officers is firing hard rubber bullets and smoke bombs into a sea of protesters who were ignoring a curfew. Across the street where I swam for years at a hotel pool, a fire extinguisher is being thrown from an apartment building among many projectiles, rocks, glass, golf balls, M80 firecrackers hurled at police. And Shea J, the dive bar beside the famed pier where Ben Affleck and Matt Damon wrote Good Will Hunting and John F. Kennedy rendezvoused with Marilyn Monroe, rat-a-tat-tat, there goes a round of pepper spray balls. Stop killing black people, reads one sign. End the hate, reads another sign. Lawlessness is one-upping sunshine as the prevailing mood here in Santa Monica. Protesters throw bottles, telling the cops to, quote, bleep yourselves, unquote. But the police don't make arrests until later in the night to mitigate national headlines. The looters are everywhere, busting windows, storming into stores and pharmacies, and stealing merchandise from establishments that have been shuttered for months by the pandemic. Helicopters are hovering. Innocent people are running for shelter. And if anybody is wearing a mask, it's a rarity. A grocery store where I have shopped is surrounded by a SWAT team, snuffing out the food looters. Blocks away, a police car is on fire beside the Civic Auditorium, where they handed out Oscars back in the 60s, and Pink Floyd, Queen, David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, the Eagles all played there. The Eagles. Welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place. Fortunately, I don't live in the thick of the skirmish lines, but this is the area on the west side of LA where I walk, eat, drink, socialize, shop, write, exercise, sip espresso, and visit the doctor and the dentist. What started as a downtown LA curfew extended to two nights of stay-home orders in response to mass rioting and looting throughout this sprawling metropolis, returning us to isolation just as COVID-19 lockdowns were easing up, businesses were opening, and you actually could sit down at a restaurant or get a haircut. Forget about that cheeseburger, beer, and sideburns cleanup when the governor deploys the National Guard. Last summoned to these LA streets back in 1992, when the cops who beat Rodney King were freed by a not guilty verdict. Were the military Humvees carrying guardsmen with M4 rifles hauling ass down the 10 freeway? Was that a round of fireworks or gunfire? Why was I hearing Rage Against the Machine in my head? There always will be blue skies and oblivious surfers in these parts, but anarchy is the new SoCal vibe. Santa Monica officials, unaccustomed to havoc normally reserved for the big city that wraps around its geographical borders, struggled to make sense of it all.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lane Dilg. I'm the interim city manager for the city of Santa Monica. Today is a devastating day for our city. An unlawful assembly has been declared, and we have had a curfew in place. At this point, our priority is to protect the safety of the members of the public. We are telling everyone to go home. Tomorrow, we start our recovery. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our Chief of Police, Cynthia Renaud.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for a few minutes. I just wanted to reiterate that the City of Santa Monica and the Santa Monica Police Department is here to support peaceful protests, but will not stand for civil unrest and criminal behavior. The Santa Monica Police Department, in coordination with our area law enforcement partners, are actively working in the city. There is a curfew in place. We are asking you to go home, and those who don't, we will begin notifying and making arrests for the curfew violation. Our intent here and our primary goal is to keep everyone safe.
And yes, that was sports troublemaker J.R. Smith in a TMZ video kicking the hell out of a white man who allegedly smashed his car window in a residential neighborhood somewhere in the L.A. fray.
Guys, don't record it, please. Please. Respect his privacy, please. Come on.
I just want y'all to know right now, before y'all see this shit somewhere else, one of these little motherfucking white boys didn't know where he was going and broke my fucking window in my truck. Broke my shit. This wasn't no this is a residential area. This wasn't no stores overhead. No, none of that shit. Broke my window. I chased him down and whooped his ass. So if the footage come out and y'all see it, I chased him down and whooped his ass. He broke my window. This ain't no hate crime. I ain't got no problem with nobody ain't got no problem with me. It's a problem with the motherfucking system. That's it. The motherfucker broke my window and I whooped his ass. He didn't know who window he broke. And he got his ass whooped. Just so y'all see it later, I'm telling y'all now.
A more measured social observer, basketball great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, captured the biggest picture with appropriate dignity. Quote, "Those people out there are demonstrating for something that is very valid," Abdul-Jabbar told KTLA, quote, "The idea that all men are created equal is not really applied to our justice system," unquote. He's right. Why would an evil cop let a little old pandemic stop him when there's hatred to vent, a neck to suffocate, and an unarmed black man to murder? Why let the most catastrophic health crisis of our time interfere with an enemy that no vaccine ever will cure? We could push a reset button on life as we've known it, which sounds like a fine idea right now, and there still would be a white police officer brutalizing a fellow human being for no other reason than the malignant growth of racism.
This is the Pandemic Proof Podcast with Jay Mariotti, an actual journalist who covered the Bay Area earthquake long after a World Series was postponed, and on 9/11, successfully demanded to keep hosting his national radio show when an advertising boss wanted to switch to network programming. Did you really think Jay ever would stick to sports during a global health crisis? Now, here's Jay Mariotti.
If this isn't the 21st century apocalypse, what is? 100 million Americans have been killed by the coronavirus. 40 million are jobless. At least 1.5 million are homeless. Scads of COVIDiots won't wear masks to safeguard themselves and others from infection. And now, as if on cue from the usual demons heckling in the balcony box, our red, white, and blue canvas is covered by mayhem, flames, sirens, and mass destruction that might only be getting started. Of course, police brutality, civil unrest, and the resulting violence would rear their wicked fangs with the worst timing imaginable, further battering a nation crippled by a pandemic that is conflated hellishly into political, economic, and wellness divides. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, who extended the overnight curfew to 5:30 a.m. on Monday, if not longer, pleaded for calm.
The pain in our city and across this country right now is real. And for everyone who is watching this who feels in pain, I want you to know I am too. For everybody who feels the hurt and everybody who feels this moment, I want you to know that I hurt too. And that each one of us across this great city and this nation have a moment of common ground, a feeling we all feel having seen what happened in Minneapolis, and a moment to move forward together to create a better city and a better nation for everyone. Our conscience demands that we translate our pain into passionate calls for justice, that we speak the truth and act to end the racism that took the life of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery and too many others. Not just in past history books, but today, where we live in America, to acknowledge the faults that we all carry collectively in the culture and the institutions that surround us. We feel a righteous rage, and we have to express it. But the rage must not consume us. It must not be turned back on us. We know that it is only with peace that progress can follow.
As for President Trump, is he still threatening White House protesters with, quote, vicious dogs and ominous weapons, end quote? Or do more infantile tweets await from the man who, when you think about it, really has created much of this madness, and I don't even do politics on this podcast. It's difficult to think about much else when the country is a war zone. Needless to say, sports is only on the minds of degenerate gamblers and I suppose the leagues and the broadcast networks desperate to recoup lost fortunes. This is no time to insult an American intellect that is pummeled and exhausted yet still armed with perspective. Don't say the fires that burned in Minnesota, the demonstrations demanding justice for another victim who could not breathe, ever could be soothed by, and mute the ESPN music, the return of live games. Don't suggest we can escape an inane presidency of Twitter bombs, currently flagged, by the way, by a yogi tech titan who fasts on weekends and meditates in Myanmar by simply sitting back and watching round balls dribbled and batted in quiet buildings. But soon enough, you know this, after a respectful pause, we'll once again read the leaked stories that continue to incrementally push a $200 billion industry toward a resumption of sports events. If the summer continues to be intense, and why wouldn't it, does it make even less sense than before to carry on with basketball and baseball, and at some point, pro and college football? The sports-obsessed director, Spike Lee, when asked when Hollywood film production might resume, said this to Vanity Fair before Floyd's death, and I'm quoting Lee, "They ain't doing a thing until the vaccine. I know I'm not going to a movie theater. I know I'm not going to a Broadway show. I know I'm not going to Yankee Stadium. Corona is a bitch. Corona is not playing. You bleep around, you're going to get killed. You're going to die. I'm not ready to go." End quote, Spike Lee. Are similarly smart people really going to watch a ball game when, in addition to the lurking virus, your city might be burning on 15 other TV channels? Will athletes and their families be able to focus on games amid the unrest when, as it is, they are imperiled by possible virus outbreaks, no matter how many tests are readily available? Logic makes a strong argument for American sports to shut down until 2021. I've said it for weeks. I will say it again. Why not monitor the national condition as well as the reopenings of European soccer leagues to see if the pandemic strikes back in those countries? Oh, I forgot. Billions of dollars are at stake, with team owners and network executives aghast at the thought of dented empires, while some players are convinced they are invincible and bigger than any silly virus. Until we hear otherwise, I guess we should assume the NBA is returning in late July and that Major League Baseball will continue to wage its internal labor battles, so inappropriate, so stupid, before deciding whether to play an abbreviated season or fade into much-deserved oblivion. I must say, even when idle, sports has managed to hammer home its considerable influence in the hours after Floyd's death. The immediate outcry might be recalled as even more important than any games scratched out in the fraught months ahead. Who needs LeBron James trying to win a playoff series in an Orlando quarantine bubble when he's posting a photo of Derek Chauvin's knee juxtaposed beside a photo of Colin Kaepernick kneeling on a sideline? There is a time and a place for social activism in sports. This is the time and the place. After the murders of Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, Michael Jordan, formerly activism phobic, answered criticism from the Last Dance docuseries by condemning police brutality, writing in a statement, quote, "I am deeply saddened, truly pained, and plain angry. I see and feel everybody's pain, outrage, and frustration. I stand with those who are calling out the ingrained racism and violence toward people of color in our country. We have had enough," end quote. Michael Jeffrey Jordan. Mike, where were you in the 90s? Where? We have yet to hear from current sports goat Tom Brady, who has been disproportionately visible during this pandemic, cussing up a storm with Howard Stern, telling golf razor Chuck Barkley to, quote, "take a suck of that," end quote, after a miracle birdie, irresponsibly hawking coronavirus-aimed supplements. But somehow, Brady can't lash out against racism, even when challenged by a hockey star, Evander Kane Hockey. Still, sports did speak, with backlash from an unexpected source, North Carolina Central basketball coach Lavelle Moten, who told ESPN Radio that he's alarmed by the silence of Power 5 basketball and football coaches. You know, the legends, Krzyzewski, Calipari, Sweeney, Saban, in the wake of Floyd's death.
Come across the timelines of coaches, everyone is silent. And I have a major issue with that. And for years, I've never really said anything, but now I think enough is enough, because here's the harsh reality. We have coaches in Power 5, football and basketball coaches. The reality is a lot of these coaches have been able to create generational wealth. I mean, their grandkids' kids are going to be able to live a prosperous life because athletes who were the complexion of George Floyd was able to run a football, throw a football, shoot a basketball, or whatever have you. So they have benefited greatly from athletes that look like George Floyd and many more. But whenever people, the complexion of George Floyd, is killed, assassinated, murdered in the street in broad daylight, they're silent. And I have a problem with that, because it seems as if black lives matter to them whenever they can benefit from it, right? Whenever they're getting them a first down, or, you know, catching a alley-oop or shooting a three or whatever. But when it's time for the humanity to speak up on behalf of those student athletes, is silence, is cricket. And so my problem is, if the murdering of black Americans is too risky of an issue for you to stand up as a leader, then who are they really playing for?
I agree with Moten. The quiet is deafening, as LeBron would agree. I'm quoting James. "Do you understand now?" asked LeBron, reminding the world why Kaepernick protested against police violence. Then there was Jaylen Brown, the young Celtics star, driving 15 hours from Boston to lead a peaceful protest in Atlanta, right near his hometown of Marietta, Georgia.
What do we want?
Justice!
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Whatever, it's a peaceful protest, but definitely want to, being a celebrity, being an NBA player, don't exclude me from no conversation at all. First and foremost, I'm a black man, and I'm a member of this community. and I grew up on this soil, so I want to say that first and foremost, but it's a peaceful protest. We walking, and that's it. Raising awareness. Some of the injustice that we've been seeing is not okay. And as a young person, you gotta listen to our perspective. Our voices need to be heard. I'm 23 years old. I don't know all the answers, but I feel how everybody else is feeling, for sure.
No peace.
No question.
If and when the games resume, I guess they'll distract us for a nanosecond, maybe, from the turbulent scenes nationwide. But sports cannot delete the sick images of a creep as distinct and despicable as this racist cop. As we enter a fourth month, or is it the sixth or the tenth, of battling a devil ghost that has drained a country's spirit and bank accounts, there can be no diversion here. We are too far gone for that. Basically, the tinderbox that is America needs something, anything that will function through the chaos and not break down in crisis. This is how sports, I suppose, can re-enter the mark if it so audaciously insists, and how a progressive league such as the NBA is positioned to at least get up and running while a graying, labor-torn, out-of-touch fossil such as MLB is ill-equipped to lead in bleak times. If sports must return, it might as well launch with its best shot to succeed, and that would be the NBA, led by a woke commissioner presiding over a predominantly African-American league. Whether it was LeBron's tweet or Jaylen Brown's march or Steven Jackson speaking out about his friendship with Floyd or Steve Kerr trashing Vice President Mike Pence for a White House tweet that denounced the mass protests or teams releasing statements condemning racism and violence against the black community, let's just say the response was exactly what we have come to expect from Adam Silver's league. Quote, Steve Kerr, this is murder, disgusting, he tweeted. Seriously, what the hell is wrong with the U.S., end quote. Here was Steven Jackson speaking at a rally for his dead friend.
I'm here because they're not going to demean the character of Greg or George Floyd,
that's right, that's
my
right.
twin. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when police do things that they know that's wrong, the first thing they try to do is cover it up mm-hmm. and bring up your background mm-hmm. to make it seem like the bullshit that they did was worthy.
Mm-hmm.
When was murder ever worthy?
Never.
But if it's a black man, it's approved. You can't tell me when that man had his knee on my brother's neck, taking his life away with his hand in his pocket, that smirk on his face didn't say I'm protected.
That's right.
That's what it says. That's what it says.
A ball game never has seemed more frivolous and inconsequential. But here's one reason America still can bond with sports. The NBA gets it. And it will remind us, even inside a Disney World bubble fraught with medical peril, that pro basketball maintains a social conscience that baseball woefully lacks. For several days, I've also seen sports people beyond the NBA, athletes and coaches and executives, rail against the relentless scourge of racism. Even Joe Burrow, himself only 23, was savvy enough to wax responsibly as an NFL rookie. Quote, Joe Burrow, the black community needs our help. They have been unheard for far too long. Open your ears, listen, and speak. This isn't politics. This is human rights, end quote. However, disturbingly, I had to search long and hard to find related baseball tweets before seeing this from the thoughtful Sean Doolittle, who wrote, quote, racism is America's original sin. It was here before we even forged a nation and has been passed down from generation to generation. And we still struggle to acknowledge that it even exists, much less atone for it, end quote, Sean Doolittle. Why not more MLB-based reaction? Oh, maybe because only 68 of the 882 major leaguers on opening day rosters last season, 7.7%, were African-American. The Los Angeles Dodgers, who showcase a statue of racial groundbreaker Jackie Robinson outside a stadium right near the rioting, didn't have one black player on their roster, and 11 teams had no more than one. The sport that once heralded Henry Aaron and Willie Mays as its greatest stars has lost an entire generation of talented athletes to basketball and football, with African Americans comprising 75% of NBA rosters and 70% of NFL rosters. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell was quick to issue a statement, quote, "As current events dramatically underscore, there remains much more to do as a country and as a league. These tragedies inform the NFL's commitment and our ongoing efforts. There remains an urgent need for action. We recognize the power of our platform in communities and as part of the fabric of American society. We embrace that responsibility and are committed to continuing the important work to address these systemic issues together with our players, clubs, and partners," end quote, Roger Goodell, to which the veteran receiver Kenny Stills, who a year ago was still protesting on the sideline, and he speaks for many players in replying, quote, "Save the bull bleep," end quote. We're still waiting for a statement from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, who does not get it and never will get it. Not to generalize, because the likes of Doolittle, Marcus Stroman, and Paul DeYoung are as enlightened as any modern athlete, but baseball isn't exactly brimming with social awareness. Can you believe that some players have said they won't obey COVID-19 protocol rules that ban sunflower seeds, chewing tobacco, and the spitting necessary for both functions? I'm quoting Charlie Blackman, the Colorado outfielder, the four-time All-Star. He told Sports Illustrated, "Wait, what? I'm 100% going to spit. That's ingrained in my playing the game. Whether or not I'm dipping or chewing gum, I'm still going to spit. I have to occupy my mind. It's like putting things on autopilot. I don't have this idle time where my consciousness wanders. I fill my time with thought processes that are like a cruise control." I can't. Look, there's woke and there's whack. That was whack. When I see the brain power and energy invested in the rush to resume sports, the race to be the first major league back in business on U.S. soil, I wonder why such efforts and dynamism aren't redirected to where they're truly needed: medical science, race relations, leadership. In the case of baseball, such missions are laughable. MLB has tried to advance its role as a comforting, restorative balm, which is especially hokey with the league in its usual self-destructive labor mode. Once again, owners would rather portray players as greedy, pandemic deaf ingrates than embrace a golden gift of the calendar. Yes, a July 4th holiday in the heat of a volatile summer that could present the sport in a rare positive light. Imagine a temporary truce, a mutual willingness to table their money differences and give this country a patriotic mental health option. Pfft, silly me. Meet the new commissioner, same as the old commissioner, representing the same ownership mindset that almost killed baseball in the mid-90s and might bury the sport forever if the season is canceled because of financial contretemps that never have been more galling than amid a national crisis. All of which leaves the NBA poised to lead at some point, near or far, as MLB dies. Not that a cumulative wokeness can stop a virus outbreak, of course, one that ends a season as abruptly as it stopped on Rudy Gobert night. As an indoor endeavor played by men in shorts who sweat and spray saliva on every possession, basketball is the one sport in which positive tests are inevitable, which could lead to disarray, in particular if athletes and family members foolishly slip away from the campus and venture into Florida, then spread whatever they might catch throughout the so-called Magic Kingdom of round ball. Even Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, ready to roll with the season, emphasizes caution.
I mean, I wish I could tell you. I wish I knew. But there's still, I mean, there's just so much uncertainty. And, you know, the only certainty I have is that it's going to be safety first. And I'm sure that'll be part of the discussion. And once we feel more confident there, then we can start drilling down on final decisions on dates and places and teams.
If a player listens to all of this and says, you know what, I don't feel comfortable. I don't want to do it. Maybe it's something with his own health, a family member. What do you think should happen to that player and his contract status and all of that?
I don't know, honestly. That's kind of a CBA issue. So that has to be addressed by the league and the players union. But, again, we just got to be transparent with everything. Of course, there's going to be uncertainties. You know, you can look back when Magic Johnson announced he had HIV and looked at the response there. You know, at the beginning, it was really dramatic, and the players were really adamant that they didn't want to play. But as more knowledge came out and there was transparency, guys understood the details.
Remember, America may be over the pandemic, but the pandemic is not over. At least the coronavirus is a puncher's chance for an eventual cure. Racism, however, is untreatable, terminal, beyond hope. My suggestion for a pure sports fix would be to find a happy place where children are enjoying a game for the fun of it. Wait, the park where I watched fathers toss balls to their kids for years? You may have seen it in the news footage, caught in hatred's crossfire. Now it's time for The Buzz, our regular deep dive into sports and life with Chris joining the program. Chris, you grew up here in Southern California. You remember the Rodney King riots, and you just saw the city summon the National Guard for the first time since that wicked year of 1992. What has been going through your mind as you watch the civil unrest fallout of the George Floyd murder?
Well, Jay, 1992, I was 9 years old, and my father was on the radio here in Los Angeles. He was doing afternoons, and he was caught in the riots. This radio station management told him to put on a tape and get out of there. And, you know, this is pre-cell phone. This is him calling us before he left the radio station saying, I'm leaving now. We lived in Friendly Hills at the time, which is a nicer part, if you will, an upscale part of Whittier, California. And, you know, that drive on a normal day was probably 45 minutes to an hour back then from his work to our home. And I remember it was 2 hours because he went really slow and the freeways, smoke everywhere. And that anxiety as a kid watching what was going on television and my mother explaining it. And she grew up here in Los Angeles when it was the Watts riots many, many years before. And her explaining to me what was going on and me waiting patiently and with full anxiety of my father walking in, and he did, obviously, and that took me back, watching some of this. I guess the difference that was so stark is those neighborhoods that burned in 1992 were neighborhoods that I wasn't really familiar with. They were neighborhoods that were, you know, I remember when Boys in the Hood came out a few years before that and all that. Those were the violent neighborhoods. They were not neighborhoods I was exposed to. They were not neighborhoods that I went to very often, if any times. So it was a little easier, I guess, for my parents to explain to me what was going on in the sense of these people are upset and they're rioting and protesting in their neighborhoods and they're not going to come here and you're not going to be hurt and our house is going to be fine and all those things that they were trying to tell their child to comfort me at the time. The difference is we're watching protesters and looters and violence and unrest in neighborhoods that, frankly, I hate this term, Angelino, but as somebody who grew up here my entire life, you never thought you would see that. I never thought Santa Monica, where you are, would have rioting or looting. I never thought you would see this in Beverly Hills. And I guess that's what's so eye-opening of all this and frustrating at the same time, because there doesn't seem to be a lot of obstruction going on from police or anyone, really. And I understand the anger. I understand the emotion. I have no problem with people protesting. I think that that's a positive thing. We all know a lot of this violence and looting and destruction is not caused by the people that are peacefully protesting, obviously. And that's what's so frustrating, Jay.
And Chris, as it is, sports was treading in dangerous territory when it vowed to resume games amid a pandemic. Now that we have an intense summer ahead, in addition to the rising coronavirus toll and rampant unemployment, tell me, why are we proceeding with ball games again?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Last night, I probably spent hours watching the news in disgust, in my own anger and anxiety all over again. And it would have been nice to find The Last Dance, another episode of The Last Dance. By the way, thanks, Michael Jordan, for speaking out. It's good that you finally did. So I think that sports, can still be that distraction. It felt like ironic, really, that the weekend that COVID had sort of taken a back step to businesses opening, sort of people feeling like, okay, it's okay to go outside. It's okay to go sit down at a restaurant, still wear your mask, still wash your hands, all that. Then this happens. So I think that this is an instance where sports can unify us. Sports can bring us back to some sort of normalcy. This is what sports usually does. And I think that that is important now. You know, whether it's safe, whether we can all debate that. But it would be nice for there to be a distraction on right now. I'm not going to lie.
And Chris, if Major League Baseball, with everything happening in the world, chooses to fold up a season because billionaires and millionaires can't agree on how to divide the financial pie during this pandemic, doesn't the sport and the commissioner deserve to fade away and never return?
Listen, Major League Baseball, and I think I said this last week, I'm stunned that Major League Baseball, a sport that desperately needed eyeballs on it, a sport that desperately needed a younger generation to fall in love with the base, with the game that I did when I was a boy, they had an opportunity to be first. They had an opportunity to get out there. They had an opportunity to say to people, hey, we're going to be there for you, and we're going to help be that distraction and get you through this. They have turned this into a debacle in which they seem to be the only league fighting about money. They seem to be the only league fighting about issues that, frankly, nobody cares about. And I understand it's quite a pay hit for a lot of these players. I get it. But people in the world are taking a pay hit. People in the world are losing jobs. People don't have money. They don't have food. I can't imagine how these guys think that they're going to be able to justify this. And they're using health and safety as the cover. We all know that's BS. Nobody, these guys, that's not what's actually happening. It's ridiculous that health and safety are brought up, but then money is brought up. And it's really sad from both sides. And I think that baseball, if they don't come back, and to your point, July 4th can be that perfect scenario for them. If that doesn't happen, baseball's got a big problem. I don't see them weathering this. 1994 took out a lot of fan base. It took me out. I don't care about baseball. I watch the World Series. I watch what I have to for work. But frankly, if I never attended another baseball game in my life, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care if I ever watched another baseball game. I could just watch highlights of the 1988 Dodgers and I'd be fine. So they better be careful. They better get back to games. Listen, if sports are happening this summer and basketball's happening and we're getting ready for football and the NHL is doing the Stanley Cup Finals and golf is happening and UFC and all the others, baseball, you're going to seem really just not relevant to this country and to popular sports and fans if you're not playing.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Stay safe, and I'll say that twice.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
No doubt the National Football League would benefit substantially in the optics of social awareness if a franchise swooped in right now and signed Colin Kaepernick. That was the suggestion of Joe Lockhart, the former Clinton White House press secretary and the league's primary spokesperson during the national anthem controversies of years past. Lockhart penning a column for CNN urging the Minnesota Vikings to sign Kaepernick. That's the team that plays games a few blocks from where George Floyd was murdered. When Lockhart worked for Commissioner Roger Goodell in 2017, he said, quote, Kaepernick was not blocked because the league wanted to punish him for setting off the protests, end quote. No, according to Lockhart, teams ignored the NFL's, quote, prodding and pushing, unquote, for somebody to sign him, adding that franchises, quote, thought he was bad for business and that an executive from one team that considered signing Kaepernick told Lockhart that the team projected losing 20% of its season ticket holders if they did sign Kaepernick, end quote. Whether or not Kaepernick is still too hot to handle can be debated from now until the end of the world, which, by the way, could be coming any day the way life is going. But for now, consider two important points in any Kaepernick discussion. One, the NFL season is in limbo because of the pandemic. And two, Kaepernick, as I've said so many times, has not been a difference-making quarterback since 2013, and at times, such as when I covered him in San Francisco, he was a pretty bad quarterback. He hasn't played an NFL down in almost 4 years, and when the league arranged for a mass tryout last year, he complained, moved the workout site, and pissed everybody off. So stop the politicking, Joe, and everybody else. I've seen media people do it as well this weekend. And let Colin Kaepernick do his social conscience work. He is no longer a quarterback. That's our show. Thanks to Mac Miller, no longer with us, for his musical contribution in the show open. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody or anything mute you in life. Actually, I don't think my reminder is necessary today.
Now you do what they told you.